Hampshire, the Live Free or Die State, comes the Dr. Catherine Olbrecht Show. 2 hours of mentally stimulating, thought-provoking, sometimes maddening, but hopefully always inspiring talk radio. I'm your host, Dr. Catherine Olbrecht, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. I have a special guest, Melissa Henson, the Director of Communications and Public Education for the Parents Television Council, online at parentstv.org. As regular listeners to the program know, I have very grave concerns about the unfettered access that we give our children to the television, sort of that sewer that dumps out an endless stream of filth and corruption into our living rooms, and many children now write directly into their bedrooms with no parental supervision at all. So I thought Melissa would be a great and helpful guest to tell us a little bit more about what exactly it is we're exposing our kids to. Hello, Melissa. Do we have Melissa there? Well, let's see. While we wait for Donovan, our very capable board operator, to bring Melissa up, I'm going to go ahead and read you a little bit of her bio and her background. She supervises the Parents Television Council's program content analysis. That's where they take a look at programming on the mainstream television, the major networks, and also on some of the minor or cable networks as well. They take a look at and analyze that content. She has produced a number of groundbreaking studies that document shocking levels of graphic sex, violence, and profanity on television. Since 1997, she has looked at the impact of entertainment, particularly television, on American popular culture, becoming an expert on how this issue is affecting our kids. She has a degree in government from the University of Virginia and served as president of the university's Literary Society and Debating Union, and she currently resides with her husband in Falls Church, Virginia. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
There we go. Okay, great. Good to have you on with me this afternoon. So tell me a little bit about the Parents Television Council and what it is that you do there.
Sure. The Parents Television Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan media watchdog organization dedicated to restoring responsibility to the entertainment industry. I know that's a mouthful, but essentially what we do is we monitor television programming, we report on it, we release studies, we provide viewing guides for families and parents. We also try to affect change. We encourage activism, and we try to give our members the tools to speak out in opposition to the things that they see on TV that they find objectionable or offensive. And we also do a lot of work talking to folks on Capitol Hill and the FCC, within the entertainment industry, within the advertising industry, and trying to affect change from the inside.
All right. Well, you've got a heck of a website. That's actually how I found you, and I've been on your mailing list now for several months, and I've appreciated several of the studies that have come out just recently. I know you issued a press release. You've got a couple now. Back last month, came out and talked about the broadcast TV shows that children watch most, and then you followed that up by talking about the best and worst television advertisers. Are you the person who is responsible for putting together those research studies?
I have in the past. But we have a new research director out in our Los Angeles office, so I was not directly involved in these studies this year, but I have worked on them in years past.
Okay, well, give us a sense right now, what are the top watched television shows for kids or by kids? And the real question that I have is, are they shows that we as people concerned about the education of young people or their well-being, are they shows that we would even consider children's programming?
Generally not. You know, and that, I think, is partially a function of primetime broadcast TV. The traditional model for broadcast television during primetime viewing hours is to really try to capture the largest possible audience. So we don't see a lot of kid-specific programs. But that's okay as long as there are family-oriented programs like we've seen in years past. I mean, you could look at shows like The Cosby Show or Happy Days or The Andy Griffith Show, and those were not kids' shows per se, but they were certainly things that any parent would feel comfortable allowing their children to watch.
You wouldn't shudder like you would with some of the stuff that's out today.
Right, exactly. And what we're seeing today is not only a lack of shows that are appropriate for kids, but a lack of shows that are even appropriate for families. And to the extent that there are family shows on TV, really none of them anymore are scripted programs. They're exclusively game shows or reality shows. So although we're happy to brag about Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which we think is a terrific show, great values, very positive, no offensive content, it's kind of unfortunate that, you know, there are no scripted shows that we can point to anymore and say this is, you know, a laudable program. This is a program that will reinforce positive values for your children.
All right. Our guest is Melissa Henson. She's with the Parents Television Council. I want to give out the phone number if you have a question for Melissa. 1-800-259-9231. My email address is kma@spychips.com, spychips.com. And in case you're wondering, Melissa, that's because that's the book that I co-authored on RFID. So kma@spychips.com and 1-800-259-9231 if you'd like to speak directly with Melissa. Now, you were saying that there aren't a lot of scripted programs. And let me see if I understand what that means. That would be referring to programs where you've actually got a creative team that sits down and writes a script. You've got actors actually playing a dramatic or a comedic role in a program, as opposed to, I guess, what we're seeing a lot of these days, the reality-based shows where there's really not a lot of effort or pre-planning, it seems like, that goes into the programs.
Right, exactly. And that's not necessarily entirely bad news. You know, if we'd had this conversation 10 years ago, I would have said that's disastrous, because back then reality shows were really characterized by programs like Married by America or Temptation Island. You know, everybody could probably name two or three shows that really had a salacious premise, you know, and that were just outrageous. But these days, reality programming is more characterized by programs like Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which I mentioned earlier, or American Idol, you know, talent competitions, Dancing with the Stars, those kinds of programs, which, you know, they're not, with the exception of Extreme Makeover Home Edition, those other programs, American Idol and so forth, aren't really going to reinforce values, but at the same time, they're not likely to contain something that's going to shock or embarrass you. But that's really all we're seeing, or primarily what we're seeing on TV these days. And, you know, given what's happening with the economy, I think that's what we can expect to see more of in the next year or two, because they're so inexpensive to produce. And, you know, if the networks are also feeling a little bit constrained by finances, then I think we can expect to see more reality shows, more game shows in the next couple of years.
Well, it sounds like that may be a good thing, because at least if they're not contributing to the general well-being of our kids, it sounds like at least they're not undermining the well-being of our kids.
Right. And as long as the reality shows that we see coming down the pike are consistent with what we've seen in the last year or two, I think that's not necessarily bad news, as you say, but who knows? They may decide to go back to some older models for reality TV.
Well, and it's kind of just it's in a way, it's a dumbing down of television itself, because one of the things that you can learn from television, and we'll get in a minute into the fact that I'm not a big fan of TV, period. But one of the things that TV can actually teach you, in the same way that, you know, that a book or a novel unfolds, is it can actually teach you about dramatic timing. It can teach you about scripting, about you know, setting up characters and scenes. And these are all skills that could be extremely helpful in an age of media literacy, where our kids, you know, may well, when they grow up to write the great American novel, they may instead find themselves in a world where the great American screenplay would be more the way to go. And if they're only learning their television literacy or their media literacy from reality TV shows and Dancing with the Stars and, you know, people making over houses, then they're not going to develop that sense of sort of how you put together a cohesive and a coherent story.
Right.
Let me ask you, as far as you joined the Parents Television Council back in 1997, and when we come back from this break, I want you to give us a sense of how you've seen the television industry, and particularly the content, changing in the last 12 years. I certainly have a sense, or I guess 11 years now, I certainly have a sense it's changed dramatically from when I used to watch TV. We're visiting with Melissa Henson, 1-800-259-9231. We'll be right back. If you'd like to ask her a question, stay with us.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
stay all night and play with my TV. TV is a thing this year, this year. TV is a thing this year. Radio was great, now it's out of date. TV is a thing this year. Last night I was watching Old Tom Mix. My TV broke, I was in a fix. I got on the phone, called my man, said, get here, Daddy, as fast as you can. TV is a thing this year.
Oh, yeah, it's the Queen, Ella Fitzgerald. Actually, I take that back. That's Dinah Washington. Sounds just like Ella, but that's Dinah Washington from that same era. And our guest, of course, this hour, Melissa Henson with the Parents Television Council. And, you know, as I was pulling up some music for this segment, Melissa, I ran across that and I said, man, they had no idea what they were getting themselves into back there in the 40s and 50s when they were all excited about this new invention called television. They were just, you know, bring it on. I don't think they ever saw, and had they been able to look, 60 years into the future and see what television is now bringing into people's living rooms, I almost wonder if we would have adopted the darn device at all.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mention that, because as early as the 1950s, they were holding congressional hearings to examine the effects of media exposure on kids. So obviously it was something that was a concern for some people, you know, and some of those early studies pointed to a cause and effect relationship between exposure to violence in media and aggression in children. And, you know, we've been doing similar research now for the last 50 years, and I think the latest tally was something like 3,100 studies that have been done on television, and all but 18 of those 3,100 studies have pointed to a causal relationship between exposure to media violence and aggression in kids. So,
well, you know, it stands to reason, because I was talking about this yesterday on the show. Children were before we had media, before we had sort of artificial scenes acted out by adults and other children, whatever children saw, they were supposed to imitate. You know, if you have children growing up in an environment where they need to learn how to sharpen axes or use arrows or plow fields or whatever it is, you wanted them to do the things that they saw the adults around them doing. So it's not really surprising that children would imitate the behaviors that they see on television.
Right, and particularly, you know, if a child identifies with the person that they see on TV, for example, you can point to some of the popular teenage dramas that are, or teen-targeted dramas that are on television today, like Gossip Girl and 90210. You know, and the characters on these shows are, they're affluent, they're attractive, they're popular. You know, they're all the things that an impressionable teenager thinks they should be. And when they see these teenage characters that are also sexually active, and then there's no discussion of risk or consequences for being sexually active, when they're shown with multiple partners, and not even discussion of pregnancy as a possible health outcome, you know, a teenager is going to walk away with the impression that there's something wrong with them if they don't act that way, or that that kind of behavior is the route to getting them what they want in terms of being popular. So it is very difficult, I think, for parents to combat these messages that kids so readily absorb from watching television.
Absolutely. Our guest this hour is Melissa Henson. She's with the Parents Television Council. Their website is online at parentstv.org, and they have a number of recent studies out. In one of them, PTC ranks the broadcast TV shows children watch the most, and they have a rather unique ranking system. You rank them with a green light, a yellow light, or a red light. Can you explain
right.
that to us?
Well, we have for, oh gosh, the last 12 years at least, published something called our Family Guide to Primetime TV. And we use a very simple traffic light rating system in order to easily communicate to parents whether or not this is a program they can comfortably or safely watch with their children. So green light is go ahead. It's clean. It's wholesome. Nothing to worry about there. Yellow light, you know, just as when you're driving, indicates proceed with caution. This may be a program you ultimately approve for your children, but you'll probably want to pre-screen it before allowing your children to watch or watch with them. Or there may be some problematic content that you should be aware of. And a red light is basically warning parents that this is not something that they should be allowing their child to watch.
And I'm on your website right now, and one of the features that I found very useful here for parents is you've got a pull-down menu, so it's very easy to navigate. You can look up a television show. They're in alphabetical order. And just to give people a sense of the kinds of programs that you've rated, you've got 24, 30 Rock, Seventh Heaven, The Academy, According to Jim, All of Us, The Amazing Race, America's Funniest Home Videos, America's Most Wanted, America's Top Model, and on, all the way up through to the W's and Z's here. Ugly Betty, The Unit, Whacked Out Videos, What I Like About You, Wife Swap, Will and Grace, Wipe Out Without a Trace, Women's Murder Club, Worst Week, and Yes, Dear. And I skipped a whole ton of content there in the middle. And so any one of those shows, if you have a question about it, or if you know that your child or a child that you know is watching this programming, you can quickly log on to parentstv.org. You can pull down this helpful little menu that says look up a TV show, and voila, you can click it. And then you've also got a feature there for movie reviews, which I found very, very helpful. Tell us a little bit about how that came about and what its purpose is.
Well, we started out at Parents Television Council. We started out focusing on television, but increasingly we were finding that parents were contacting us, seeking our input on films they were considering taking their children to. So we don't review films as comprehensively as we review television programs, but we do try to at least review programs, we try to at least review films that are being directly marketed to children or that are likely to have a broad appeal for children. So like the Batman movies, for example, even though the most recent one was very dark, in terms of themes and content, we knew that that was something that would be very attractive to teenage audiences. So we do try to review things that we know parents are likely going to have questions about. So,
As I look through here, I see that a lot of these are things that you might rent, too. These are not just current in the theater movies, but things that people may consider bringing home to their kids.
Or that are recently released on DVD. So, yeah, a lot of PG and G-rated movies and some PG-13 and even some R-rated movies that we think are likely to be something that kids are going to want to ask their parents to see.
Yeah, I'm checking them out right here. Scooby-Doo, Scooby-Doo 2, Space Chimps, Speed Racer, Spider-Man 3. So you've really got you've covered a lot of bases here. Well, so if people want to get involved in their children's television viewing habits, where would you recommend that they start?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, to get the TVs out of the kids' bedrooms. According to some of the more recent surveys, I've seen 2/3 or more of American children. In fact, I think the number is closer to 80% now. 80% of American children have TVs in their bedrooms.
80%? Wait. 80% of American kids have a TV in their bedroom where they can shut the door and watch anything?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
You know, and it's always interesting for me to talk about PTC issues and talk about these things that we know are of concern for so many parents, but there does seem to be a little bit of a disconnect. I think a lot of people assume that it's a problem for the kid down the street whose parents aren't as good as I am.
Exactly, and where else do we see that? That attitude in a lot of different places. All right, our guest this hour, Melissa Henson, is with the Parents Television Council, parentstv.org. If you'd like to call in with a question, our number here, 1-800-259-9231. Do you let your kids watch TV? If so, in what amount and how do you control it? All right, let us know. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
I've been blinded almost daily, 'cause I watch too much TV. My mind wanders down the one we've laid before me. I've forgotten what I've seen. So here's my revelation. I am, I'm alright when you're right beside me. Nothing left to decide. This life becomes
all right. And we're back. You're listening to Dr. Catherine Albrecht on GCN Live, online at GCNLive.com. And, of course, an archive of this program and all other programs that I've done over the last 18 months available online at CatherineAlbrecht.com. You know that song, Melissa, our guest, of course, Melissa Henson with the Parents Television Council, that song was saying, I'm all right as long as you're beside me. I kind of, you know, as I was listening to that, I was thinking, yeah, I need the viewing guide right here so I can tell. But, you know, in reality, it doesn't take a lot of discernment. I mean, you flip on one of these shows or you even look at the advertisements. I'm thinking specifically of this show Dexter about a serial killer, and you see him dripping with blood, you know, holding a chainsaw with blood all over the floor and dripping from the walls. And, you know, it doesn't take rocket science. I don't need your expert report to tell me, hey, wait a minute, that may not be a good show for a 6 or 7 year old to be watching.
Yeah, but you would be shocked, I think, to see what kind of programs young children are watching. Our publication, which you've referenced a couple of times in this hour, ranking the best and worst TV shows that are watched by children, you know, it includes things like Family Guy and American Dad, which, you know, your listeners may or may not be familiar with. They're certainly attractive to children because these are animated series, but when you look at what they deal with thematically, content-wise, I mean, they've had storylines exploring things like bestiality. They've had storylines involving a sexually promiscuous next-door neighbor who is into all kinds of bizarre and kinky and fetishistic behaviors. And so thematically, it's a very adult-targeted cartoon. It's very appropriate for adults, but not at all appropriate for children. And yet millions and millions of young children are watching this show week after week. So kids don't always watch age-appropriate programs. And the problem that we often encounter is, you know, professionals in the social science, you know, who study how kids are affected by media exposure will often recommend, or groups like the American Pediatric Association or American Psychological Association will often recommend co-viewing. But unfortunately, what often happens is mom and dad wind up watching shows that they like with their kids, even if those shows aren't really appropriate for the children. So,
it's not that mom and dad are sitting down watching, you know, kid content. It's the other way around when you do that. Before the break, we were talking about your joining the Parents Television Council in 1997, and that was around the time that I actually stopped watching television. I made a decision that I no longer wanted to have, you know, 4 to 6 hours of my day consumed by this passive device, and so I instead, you know, began focusing on other things and became an activist and found that I was getting so much more done without this box droning away. And I also found that my attitude, you know, my thinking was cleaner, was clearer, my attitude about myself, you know, especially as a woman, we get so many negative images through the television, that my attitudes about, you know, my looks and my value as a human being all improved when I got rid of the TV. And now I only watch television when I'm traveling on business and I'm in a hotel. I'll flip it on just as I make myself flip it on for about a half an hour just to kind of catch up. And every time I've done that, it's a couple of times a year, every time I do it, I'm stunned at how much television has changed just in the last 11 or 12 years.
Yeah.
What has happened? What is happening to our television? And why is it that this absolutely, completely inappropriate content, I mean, serial murderers and I saw an ad where a young man was knocking on the door with a bouquet of roses for his girlfriend, and the mother answered the door and practically seduced him right there on the doorstep. Her daughter's boyfriend. I was like, what in the world? Who would consider this appropriate television content? Where is this coming from, and how are they getting away with it?
Well, I think there are a couple of factors that are influencing content. One being that we have this rating system. And the purpose of the rating system, as the entertainment industry would explain it to us, is to help parents to choose appropriate programs for their children. The problem is that there really is a lack of awareness of what the ratings mean. That's one issue. Another issue is that in addition to a lack of awareness, there's no independent body that's administering these television ratings. So it's basically each network deciding for themselves what their shows should be rated, and obviously there's an element of self-interest at play. So there's no consistency in how the ratings are applied. But at the same time, those ratings have sort of given the networks an excuse to introduce edgier and edgier content, because now they can say, hey, we told you it was going to be there. Mm. You know, they're no longer restrained by the notion that, you know, the television is an invited guest in the family home and that they should exercise some restraint because there may be children in the viewing audience. Now it's, we can do whatever we want. And, you know, as long as we tell you it's going to be there, then.
Right.
Then
you were warned. So if you watch it anyway, it's your fault, not ours. Wow.
Exactly.
All right. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got a call in from Melissa in Texas. Hi, Melissa. You're on with, Melissa in Texas. You're on with Melissa Henson, our guest with Appearance Television Council. Go right ahead.
Hey, I actually spoke to you a couple days ago about this topic. One specifically, I haven't owned a television in, 4 or 5 years, and it's been the most wonderful experience to me. I wanted to mention this Dexter show specifically. I found it on the internet, and I decided to watch a couple episodes of it just to see what, you know, the big deal was. I heard a lot of people at Starbucks where I work talking about it, and I was like, okay, let's see what this is. I mean, this vigilante thing that is being pushed on television and in movies right now is scaring me half to death. Yeah. You're giving people this idea that going out and being the good guy, bad guy thing is a good idea. Like, yeah, it's acceptable. Because when you're watching this movie, you're on his side. You're his, you know, you're this is the good guy.
So you're on the side of the serial killer when you watch this.
This is the good guy. He works for the police. He works for the police, and he is the forensics science guy. You know, he does all the, you know, he's a blood spatter specialist, specifically. That's what he does. I remember that. And he is this behind-the-scenes murderer, like, flat out.
Well,
I don't care if he's killing bad people, good people. He is a murderer, and he's working for the police, and that's this whole show.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
We have seen in recent years this trend of the criminal protagonist really get a foothold. And to me, that's especially troubling and especially problematic, because we know from social science, from studies that have been done, that the more a child identifies with the person committing the violent act, the more likely it is to become acceptable or learn behavior in their eyes. So if they see these sort of vigilantes on TV, or if they see people using violence as a solution to any conflict, then they're going to learn from watching those programs that this is the way I deal with these kinds of situations in real life.
Yeah, and aside from him being a serial killer on the side, he's like the perfect person.
Yeah.
Sweetheart, great manners, great personality, you know, like this and that. You know, it's really scary to me that if kids, you know, how many kids do you know that have televisions in their room, you know? Mm-hmm. They're flipping on the TV, mom and dad are out watching whatever program they want to watch, and the kid's in the room watching, you know, God knows what, and it's frightening to me that this is the kind of stuff that we're putting into these children's minds, because, you know, they're going to be running the country. They're going to be, you know, just like I am one, you know, my generation is going to one day. And what were we brought up on? I mean, we were brought up on grunge music and all this crazy MTV stuff, and it's like, you can see it having the effect as the adults get older. Like, you can tell that they've been affected by the things that they were shown and, you know, drowned in pretty much as we were growing up. Like, I remember the cartoons, even specifically, like, Bugs Bunny, my favorite guy in the world. You know what I mean? When I was growing up, he was the greatest. They had the, like, evil Middle Eastern guy with a huge sword, and, you know, it was like this. It was always the bad guy, and I even thought that kind of stuff. That's awkward, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, if the worst we saw were cartoon violence in the form of Bugs Bunny, and, you know, some say that impacted us as well, you know, what's going to happen to these kids who see serial murders taking matters
exactly
in their own hands? All right, appreciate the call, Melissa. We'll be right back and take more of your phone calls, 1-800-259-9231. Stay with us.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
And I would turn on the TV, but it's so embarrassing to see all the other people. I don't know what they mean. And it was magic at first when they spoke without sound.
But now this world is gonna hurt. You better turn that thing down.
Turn it down. I'd say get it out of your house altogether, but I realize I'm in the minority. Most people do have a television. Our guest, Melissa Henson with the Parents Television Council. Melissa, what are the statistics now on the number of U.S. households that do and don't have televisions?
Well, virtually every U.S. home is a television household. I think there are fewer than 2% of U.S. houses that don't have television.
And how many of those would you guess, just in your experience, are by choice or just by economic circumstance where they can't afford a TV?
I think most of those are by choice. I've seen people do without food for the kids before they do without their TV.
Okay. I think you're right, actually. Yes. Probably not too many welfare households out there without a television. And you can get them really cheaply now. I mean, my gosh. I believe that was the reason why they had the trampling incident on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, was that Walmart opened at 5 a.m. and said that the first 10 people to make it to the cash register with this big screen TV would get it for like $100. Mm-hmm. And that was why there were literally thousands of people outside of that store at 5 o'clock in the morning pushing and shoving, and they were in such an eager rush to get to the cheap TV that a person lost his life in the ensuing rush. So clearly we are a nation obsessed with this box. And it's serious stuff. All right. A couple of emails I want to get to really quickly, and then I have a few more questions to hopefully squeeze in during your last couple of minutes here. Well, I have an email in from Dave. He says he wants to know if you have any knowledge of the flicker rate or hypnotic effect of television and the use of hypnotic suggestion and subliminals. He says, to me, this is a bigger issue than programming because the flicker rate is constant and subliminals cut across all programming, including movies. Are you doing anything about these sorts of techniques being used on kids?
Interesting question. That's actually not something that we have researched. Our expertise is primarily content. I'm sure there probably are people out there that have done similar research on that topic. But, you know, it's subliminal or not, we know that kids are influenced by what they see on TV. You know, it's why they've put pressure on the broadcast networks to reduce depictions of people smoking during primetime TV, because they've been able to draw a correlation between whether or not a child takes up smoking as an adolescent and what they see on TV. A recent Rand study pointed to a relationship between exposure to sexual content in the media and their behaviors. We've seen studies that have drawn connections between violent media content and behavior. So subliminal or not, we know that kids are learning from what they see on TV and quite often imitating behavior that they see on TV. So, and, you know, even more obviously, the whole advertising industry is premised on the notion that if you see something on TV, you're going to go out and buy it, right?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned earlier that, what is it, Family Guy, I guess is the name of the show,
that's
a cartoon that has very adult themes. I actually did watch one episode of it on the computer, and I was disgusted. I mean, absolutely revolted. I must have seen the bestiality issue or episode, because it was just absolutely stomach-churning. Mm-hmm. And what really stunned me was that, you know, that the Federal Trade Commission regulates magazine advertising. They actually, there was a big fuss over Joe Camel a couple of years ago because he was a cartoon and being used to advertise cigarettes and smoking, and they were making the connection that, well, gee, kids are going to look at Joe Camel, who's a cartoon figure, and that's going to attract them, and therefore that's going to attract kids to smoking. And they were able to, I don't know if it was voluntary or mandatory, but they got Camel cigarettes to stop using this cartoon figure. How is it that they can then go on and use these cartoon figures on the television to do things that are, I think, even worse? I mean, promoting far worse behavior than smoking.
That's really an excellent question. You know, the entertainment industry has deep pockets. And they have a lot of lobbyists in Washington, D.C. And there have been a number of conversations, for example, dealing with how kids are affected by media violence. And there have been a number of congressional hearings and Senate hearings. But I think, unfortunately, at the end of the day, the entertainment industry tends to prevail. First of all, because, you know, as Americans, we cherish our freedoms, and that's as it should be. And we cherish the right to free speech. And I think that's appropriate and as it should be. But I think people often conflate freedom of speech with, you know, the idea that broadcast networks should be able to say and do whatever they want, and that's not the case.
Well, it seems as though it has become the case. I think the reality is that you can look around you and see that that has become the case. And as a good free market libertarian, I'm not sure that the answer that I want is to have the government come in and shut these television programs down. I really advocate the kind of work that you're doing at the Parents Television Council, because you're providing people with the information that they need so they can then make a boycott decision. And, you know, they may choose to take it all the way, as I've done in my home, and say, I'm going to boycott the device altogether. There's really nothing, you know, I don't like being a passive recipient of somebody else's idea of what should go into my brain. I mean, that stuff impacts me as an adult as well. So I think that is really, I think a market solution is the right one, but as long as everybody out there is saying, well, you know, everybody else is doing it, it must be okay.
Right.
You know, we're going to continue to see more of this. I have another question in from Ray in Pennsylvania. He writes, years ago, the federal government mandated the television sets be equipped with V-chips so parents could control the viewing content for their children. What is your view of this, and couldn't parents accomplish the same thing without a V-chip?
Yeah, well, this really does get back to the ratings issue that I was discussing earlier. All new television sets are required to be built with a V-chip, but the V-chip is meant to work in conjunction with the television ratings. So insofar as the TV ratings are unreliable, the V-chip is really unreliable. You know, we have seen a lot of problems with consistent and accurate application, not only of the content descriptors, you know, the LDSV that's supposed to be displayed along with the age-based rating to warn you about specific kinds of content, but it's very common to see violent content that's not identified with a V descriptor at the beginning of the program, or suggestive dialogue that's not identified by the presence of a D descriptor at the beginning of the program. So if those descriptors aren't there, the V chip can't work, and that's what we've often seen. And parents, yes, obviously, I think, you know, the ideal solution is for parents to be more involved and to make the best decisions for their families, but no, the reality is that parents can't be around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as much as we would like for them to. They can't always be present when their kids are watching TV as much as we would like them to. And I don't think it's unreasonable to expect some degree of responsibility from the licensees of the publicly owned broadcast airwaves. After all, we own these airwaves. NBC doesn't own them. ABC doesn't own them. CBS doesn't own them. We do. And I think it's appropriate for us to say, you know, we expect you to show some respect for this public resource that we've given you permission to use.
Well, and I certainly think it's appropriate to organize protests and letter writing drives and all sorts of complaints against these companies that are spewing this garbage at our children. Really quickly, in the last minute that we have left, can you give us some of the worst shows so people can be on their guard?
Yeah, we mentioned Family Guy and American Dad, and those, in my view, are among the very, very worst because they are so attractive to children because of the animated format. I would add on top of that Moment of Truth, which is a program where people are hooked up to lie-detecting machines. It's a reality program, and they're asked all sorts of terrible questions, and you can just see the pain and embarrassment on their family's faces when they ask these horrible questions and admit to horrible things. Heroes is another one, primarily because the sort of comic book nature, comic book aspect of this program makes it very attractive to young viewers, in spite of the fact that the content is really inappropriate for young viewers. House, which is a medical drama, but it often contains edgy content, some pretty graphic surgery scenes and so forth. And the last one on our not suitable list, and these are, again, shows that we know kids are watching. The last one is Hell's Kitchen, which is another reality program.
All right. Well, thank you for that list. And for all of our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about the Parents Television Council and get their latest research report with a listing of all sorts of TV shows kids are watching, you can find that at parentstv.org. Our guest this hour, Melissa Henson, Director of Communications and Public Education for the Parents Television Council. Melissa, thank you so much for taking time out to join us.
Thank you.
All right, and we will be right back in the second hour of the program. Phone lines are still open, 1-800-259-9231. Talk a little bit more about television, and I'll be sharing some insights from Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television by Jerry Mander and Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death. So stay with us. You won't want to miss it. You're listening, of course, to Dr. Catherine Albrecht on the GCN Radio Network. We'll be right back.
It gonna be, 'cause people will tune in. How many train wrecks do we need to see before we lose touch? And we thought this was low. Well, it's bad, getting worse. So where'd all the good people go? I've been changing channels, I don't see them on the TV show. Where'd all the good people go?
All right, we're back. You're listening to the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show on GCN Live, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You can make the adjustments depending on your time zone because we are, of course, nationally syndicated. And if you are ever in a position where you can't catch this program live on your car or your home radio, you can also catch us streaming live on the Internet at GCNLive.com. All right, the last hour we had on as a guest Melissa Henson with the Parents Television Council, talking to us about her research into some of the more appalling television programming out there. I was stunned to learn myself that 80% of American kids have a television in their bedroom. You got to realize you're listening to a woman here who doesn't have a television, hasn't had one for over 10 years. I do actually own a television, but only to put in videos. And I think I've been on television more in the last couple of years than I have watched television, all told, all put together, even if you count my occasional television viewing from hotel rooms. And the one thing that's really stunned me in these last 10 years is how much television has changed. And so when I look around me and see how much people have changed, sort of the coarsening of the American psyche, the coarsening of people's public behavior, the coarsening of the way they're willing to interact with me and others, you know, in stores and public spaces. And then I flip on the TV and I go, oh, well, no wonder. No wonder. This is what they're being shown is the appropriate way to behave. Ram people with a shopping cart, grab their stuff, insult them to their face, talk to the hand. This whole ugliness of rudeness and really socially irresponsible behavior is really an outgrowth from the fact that that's what we're being shown on the television. And as Melissa was telling us, fewer than 2% or around 2% of households not having a TV. I kind of know that because when the folks from the Nielsen television survey, you know, the ratings company, they actually tried to get me to be a Nielsen household. I was once years ago, back when you filled out a piece of paper and you had a little notebook and a pencil and they gave you like $5 for your trouble. And I must have been like their worst possible subject because I was, even back when I watched TV, I was ADD TV watcher. So I'd watch this for 5 minutes, I'd flip, I'd watch that for 30 seconds, I'd flip, I'd watch that. So I would never sit through an entire TV show. And so as a result, when it came time to show, well, what exactly did you watch between the hours of 7 and 8? I had no possible way to tell them that. Kind of the way I read books these days, too. I got a whole stack of them here. So the more things change, the more they stay the same, ultimately. But most recently, when the Nielsen people came out and wanted me to be a participant in their study, I had to tell them, hey, listen, you know, I'd love to participate in your study, but here's the deal. I don't have a TV. I do not watch TV. I mean, the most that I ever have TV on is, you know, maybe to brush up on foreign language. You know, I'll play a German show or you know, have a little bit of Spanish on in the background just to kind of stay tuned into my language skills. But as far as, like, actually, you know, CNN, Good Morning America, any of that kind of stuff, I mean, it's just not something I'm ever going to do. And what I thought was so interesting was this woman, in telling me that, said, you know, you're not the first person to tell me that. Things are really changing. She said that there had been other people who, when she would go and, you know, knock door to door and ask people to participate in the studies, that there were other people who had begun telling her, I don't have a TV. I cannot participate in your study. And the one that really did my heart good, just from the sort of rebel scum perspective, you know, the in Star Wars, there's the Imperial, they're up on the Imperial deck of the Imperial Death Star, whatever it is, and they're looking out and going, and of course, there's these rebels. There's these rebels, and they're not allowing the Empire to move forward and achieve total domination because the rebels are out there rebelling. And, you know, one of these petty, I don't know, mid-level officers looks out over the bow and says, rebel scum. So that's become kind of my mantra. And in true rebel scum, in true rebel scum fashion, I was rooting for this family that this Nielsen woman was telling me about, that they were so opposed to network television, they were telling her, that when they bought their new home and moved in, one of the first things they did was call the cable company, not to ask for cable to be installed, like so many people do when they move into a new home, but to ask exactly the reverse. They called the cable company and said, your property, i.e. those cables and wires and boxes and all that stuff, is on our property and we want it gone. So you are trespassing. Your cable wires and your cable boxes and all of your equipment is trespassing on our private property, and you have 24 hours to send somebody out here and remove it, or we'll do it ourselves. Sure enough, they had not only no television, because I could at least tell her, you know, well, I have a TV, but I don't really watch it. But this family could actually tell her, no, we not only don't have a TV, we don't even have a way to plug it in. Honey, so you just go back and study that for a while. And I wonder, you know, those Nielsen people, to be completely honest and above board, really should be counting families that respond to them by saying they don't have television. As a social science researcher, I can tell you that whenever someone says no to participation or is unable to participate, that's statistically important. You have to actually monitor that stuff. So I'm sure the Nielsen people know, even if the rest of us don't know, that there's a growing number of people who've made a very conscious decision to eschew, to get rid of, to reject the television. All right, phone lines are open, 1-800-259-9231. My email window is also open, kma@spychips.com. And I want to share with you a couple of books that if you're on the fence about television, or if you know a thoughtful person who's having a hard time breaking a television addiction, let me tell you two books that may be very helpful to you. One of them is called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television by Jerry Mander, M-A-N-D-E-R. I sometimes wonder if that's actually his real name, because it sounds kind of like, you know, gerrymander to redistrict a political map. But anyway, Jerry Mander, J-E-R-R-Y, Mander, Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. The other book is Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business. And let me read you just a couple of these arguments from Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. And I think I can convince you, if you're like me and like to read and like really potent and... what's the word I want? Thoughts that go right to the heart of the matter. I think you'll love this book. All right, argument number one of Gerrymander's four arguments is titled The Mediation of Experience. And to mediate, you know, like a mediator, it means to get in between two parties. So sometimes a mediator can be good. If you're fighting with somebody in the course of a lawsuit, you may want a mediator to come in. Or if you're fighting with your spouse, you may want a mediator to come in and sort of counsel the two of you. But in this case, when Gerrymander refers to the mediation of experience, he's actually making a sort of a negative connection here, that the television serves as a mediator between you and the world. It actually gets in between you and the world. Here's how he writes it. As humans have moved into totally artificial environments, our direct contact with and knowledge of the planet has been snapped. Disconnected, like astronauts floating in space, we cannot know up from down or truth from fiction. Conditions are appropriate for the implantation of arbitrary realities. Television is one recent example of this, a serious one, since it greatly accelerates the problem. And you know exactly what I'm talking about here when I say the artificiality of television. I know kids who have no idea what a real penguin looks like, kind of believe they wear little tuxedos and suits. I know kids who have no idea what a horse looks like or a chicken, for heaven's sakes. Their only impression of those animals and indeed of the world around them comes through a glass screen in a box sitting in their living room or, worse yet, in their bedrooms. All right, phone lines are open, 1-800-259-9231. We've got some callers already on the line. We'll bring you up as soon as we come back from this break. Don't go away.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Another bribe, a stolen vote, another scandal on which to dote, a lot of sleazing. Now there's some reason for killing no TV. You're making music and singing songs. You're so ambitious, you're righting wrongs. Oh, don't forget, folks, that's what you gain, folks, when you kill your TV. I hear, well, can't you guess? You fixed up your hovel, you've authored a novel by killing your TV. You're glad to be home and feeling so right. You play with the kids, make love all night. Ho, 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 ho. Have you heard the news? That's not what I choose. I've killed my TV. You may not make much money. I don't know anyone who does. But your own jokes are funny. And your own thoughts give you a buzz. And I say, judge for yourself what's to be. And let's put to you back in the FCC. You're a better dreamer. You dream. When you kill your TV.
All right, a little advice there for you on the Catherine Albrecht Show. All right, phone lines are open, 1-800-259-9231. We're talking about television, and I've just given you the first of gerrymander's four arguments for the elimination of television. This first one, the mediation of experience, the fact that television gets between you and your experience of the world around you. Pretty serious stuff, and it's not just television that has done this, but now that we've raised a couple of generations on TV, we're now doing the same thing with video games, raising entire generations to spend their time immersed in an artificial world that is even more palpable, even more able to create that sort of consuming sense of artificiality all around you. You know, if we've got kids who are comfortable hanging out in Second Life and hanging out in World of Warcraft where they've got forests, or if they don't have forests, they can create them. They don't have to worry about the destruction of gorillas or elephants. They can just make new ones and have them sort of roam around in huge herds. Then these are people who are probably going to be far less likely to be concerned about the real actual world around them. And, you know, I ultimately, if we continue on this trajectory of mediating our relationship with the world, we will no longer have a relationship with the world. And there are certain elements that would love that to be the case so they could just continue exploiting and destroying to their heart's content. All right, phone lines are open, 1-800-259-9231. Let's go to Darren in South Carolina. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Catherine. Long time no talk to.
Hey there.
Doing?
Yeah, glad to have you checking in. I'm doing great.
Yeah, good. Great topic. My favorite. My only concern is maybe the people that really need to hear this are watching television right now.
You're probably right. And, you know, they're probably not going to do the 60-minute special on the dangers of television watching. So, you know, just self-preservation says that TV is not going to be the medium to tell you that TV is bad for you.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to have talked to your guest. I did. I received a letter from them, and I don't know how I got on her list, but God bless them. I would have loved to have talked to her. It's a shame she couldn't have stayed a little longer.
Well, let me tell our listeners how they can get on that mailing list, by the way, because you and I both receive, I guess now I know you do too, but if you go to parentstv.org, you can sign up right on there. That's where they've got the look up a TV show, find a movie review, and there's also a place right on there where you can get onto their mailing list. You can also join them, support them, send them money, and help them out on their mission. So, yeah, I'm always interested to get their email alerts because usually there's something absolutely appalling. My jaw hits the floor, and I say, "Thank goodness somebody's working on this." So it kind of relieves me of the need to go out and take on a whole other crusade or a campaign because those guys are already doing it.
It's it's just appalling in the fact that it's bad enough that most of the television shows are lawyers, doctors, and police officers. Now there's serial killers too. I think there's two of them now, if I'm not mistaken.
Two serial killer shows.
Yeah. I think there's two of them.
Well, one of them, I guess, is Dexter, and I'd never watched it. I just assumed it would be horrifying. It never occurred to me for a moment that they would paint him as the guy you'd be rooting for, actually rooting for a serial killer to go out and dismember and murder and slaughter people. I just, it's what is the world coming to if people are rooting for that? And the other trend that I've noticed, and I don't know if you've seen this, Darren, but it seems to me like a lot of the ads that I'm seeing for television programming is really a cult. It's like vampires and sort of like evil, twisted, weird spiritual themes. Have you been noticing that too?
I've not noticed that on the commercials. I've really stepped back away from the television. Most of the television I watch now is either, you know, some video of some congressman or someone saying something so that I can spam it out to my friends and let them know what's going on. I've separated myself from the entertainment industry, not as a whole, but I'd say a good portion. So I'm a little inept and, you know, up to date with the commercials. But I will say this. The programming itself clearly has gone that route. It is no doubt. You know, I think, you know, my father was a TV repairman, so I grew up with a television in every room, and I freely admit that I watched a lot of television, growing up. But it was different. It was Hogan's Heroes. It was The Odd Couple, The Carol Burnett Show. This was good programming that the family could watch. Today, it's all dark and mystical, and it really just robs people's souls of the love of and the truth of Christianity. I really believe that the people doing the programming, they're not concerned with our health. They're concerned with the bottom line, the dollar figure. And I pose this question to a lot of my fellow Christians and say, you know, let me ask you this. You don't agree with a lot of the programming. Oh no, I don't agree with that. And so, well, what about the news? It's the same people, you know, programming the news that are programming later on in the evening and somehow you think it's okay to let these strangers in at this hour where you unconditionally accept what you're being told as opposed to in the evening, well, no, this is all dark and mystical and I have to turn the TV off now. You know, somehow Bill O'Reilly is okay, but, you know, I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of interesting. You can judge a fruit by its or a tree by its fruit, and definitely if the fruit is Dexter and Family Guy and all of this awful programming, then the tree itself has got to be pretty rotten, and probably most of the fruit falling from it is not going to be looking so good. So I'm definitely with you on that count, and I don't understand how people can just sit back and let anybody fill their heads for hours on end with things that they are not filtering or have any control over. They just turn it on and boom, it just fills the room and goes right into their ears and directly into their psyche. Unbelievable. Hey, I appreciate the call, Darren. Thanks for checking in. And we'll be right back and I'll read you the second argument for the elimination of television. It's a good one. Stay with me.
thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Manipulating and propagandizing the American public down to a science, and television is the most potent mind control weapon ever developed. It is the propagandist dream. You could go back for hundreds, thousands of years, and there have been emperors and corrupt rulers and presidents and kings who would have given their eye teeth to have one fraction of the amount of ubiquitous information propagandizing ability that the television makes available today. Absolutely amazing how you can get kids to want to buy certain products just based on putting them on television. You can get the public afraid of certain things, indeed terrified of certain things. You can manipulate, move, massage, pressure. You know, it's kind of like cattle herding equipment. You know, they used to have a hard time getting the cows to go down into this big bath of insecticide to get the ticks off of them. And they had to come up with all of these special ways to kind of lure them down into the water and make their passage narrower and narrower and kind of push them gently and make the water just the right temperature so they could get them to go right on into there. And believe me, if they're spending hours, months, and years developing cattle herding technologies, how much more important are you to be able to herd? There is absolutely no question about it. Immense quantities of money, resources, and technology being devoted to figuring out how to get you to do the exact same thing all through the miracle of the television screen. All right, I am reading from Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television, the book by Jerry Mander. Let me see if I can find the publication date on this. 1977 is when it first came out. Remember, back in 1977, the programming that was being aired at that time was nothing compared to what's out today. 1977 is when I was a kid, and I got to admit, I was a couch potato. I was actually a blue armchair potato. I remember the blue armchair to this day that I used to curl up in for hours and watch stupid television programs. Gilligan's Island, The Brady Bunch, Love American Style. I look back on that and go, my gosh, how many brain cells did I devote to having a completely warped sense of adult relationships as a child watching that kind of stuff. Bob Newhart Show, you know, on and on. And yet I think about that, even though as I look back on it as an adult, that was totally inappropriate fare for a child. So much of that was inappropriate. And yet today, that would be, you know, tame family programming compared to what's available now, when it's actual scenes of people taking chainsaws and dismembering people with blood splattering on the walls and having our children actually applaud and root for the killer. Ah, my gosh. All right, argument number two. Let me let Jerry Mander do the talking here for a minute. Argument number two. Of course, argument number one was the mediation of experience the television gets between you and the real world around you. Argument number two, the colonization of experience. And what is colonization? Colonization is when you have a handful of powers that come in and dominate other arenas and take control and set down their bases and begin to populate that area and take over the natives. All right, that's colonization. Well, what Jerry Mander writes here, it is no accident that television has been dominated by a handful of corporate powers. Neither is it accidental that television has been used to recreate human beings into a new form that matches the artificial commercial environment A conspiracy of technological and economic factors make this inevitable and continue to do so. The colonization of experience. This has to do with advertising, and it has to do with who is in control of that programming and the fact that the programming creates value artificially. It creates value, transmits and propagates that into our minds, and then has us use our hard-earned capital, the sweat of our labor, to seek after and get on a treadmill seeking for that artificially created value. All right, argument three against the television: the effects of television on the human being. Television technology produces neurophysiological responses in the people who watch it. Now, again, bear in mind, Gerrymander was writing this in 1977, 78, so back in the 1970s, and we did not know even a fraction at that time of what we now know about the brain and about the brain's response to watching television. So even based on what he knew in the 1970s, it was known that this technology is dangerous for the human brain, but now we know so much more about the kind of brainwave states that it puts us into and the way it makes us so susceptible. But he goes on, it may create illness. It certainly produces confusion and submission to external imagery. Taken together, the effects amount to conditioning for autocratic control. And I'd add another piece to this. If you want to talk about the effects of TV on the human being, what effect does it have to sit still in a chair for 4 to 6 hours a day? What effect does it have? There's New York Times, I think, recently did a photo spread where an artist had taken a camera and put it inside of a television screen that was hooked up to video games. And it was called My Video Face, or My Video Game Face, or My Game Face. I think it was called My Game Face. And what they showed were the slack-jawed looks on kids' faces as they played video games. And it was picture after picture. And what he did was he had a little moving camera watching these kids' faces while they played games, and would then take individual freeze frames from those video images and try to really capture the overall feel of what these kids look like. And there were adults too in there. What they look like while staring at the television immersed in an artificial world. And the thing that struck me most, especially about television, is here they were engaged in what in their heads felt like a tremendous amount of activity. I'm jumping, I'm bouncing, I'm swinging from the trees, I'm smashing things, I'm wielding a weapon, I'm running through the jungles, I'm jumping through burned out buildings, when in reality, they're just sitting there. You'd get more exercise, you know, taking a shower or walking your dog than you would just sitting there feeling like you're engaging in these massive physical activities. Unbelievable. All right, phone lines are open. Let's go to Scott in Montana listening to us on KGEZ. Hey, Scott.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi there.
I just want to say, first off, you're a very sharp lady. I really enjoy listening to your program. I just want to correct you a little bit. Yesterday you were talking about Schweitzer. He's not the governor of North
Dakota. I corrected myself then. It's Spitzer. Schweitzer.
Montana.
Okay, Montana. Thank you. two corrections. Let me make them both publicly here, that the governor of New York was Spitzer and Governor Schweitzer is the governor of Montana. I think we got that
right
now.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's here from where we live. Anyway, I want to talk to you about television a little bit. Luckily, about 3 years ago, my house got struck by lightning. Luckily, it killed my TV. And it's ended up being a real good thing for my family. We hang out more, we talk more, we interact more. It's just been a really great thing. And, you know, I think everybody should shut it off. That song you played during your break, Kill Your Television, you know, what better word to say than that?
Yeah.
You know, I do scouts once a week, and I can tell the difference in the kids that watch television and the kids that don't. The ones that don't, they're more interactive. They're less zombie-ish, I guess you could say. You know, I in the images, I grew up watching Scooby-Doo and, you know, a lot of the shows that you stated that you watched earlier. And, you know, whether there's the flashing, you know, what you were talking about, with the blue lights, is that what it was?
Yeah, the refresh rate, and that's caused that's actually caused seizures in Japan among kids. So we do know that it has physiological consequences.
Well, my family and I usually go on a walk every night, and while we're walking, we're looking at houses, and people have all their lights off and their TVs flash.
And that eerie, creepy blue glow in all the windows. Hey, congratulations for killing your TV. I'm actually glad for that lightning strike, Scott. Okay. All right, we're coming up in a break. We'll be right back. Phone lines are open. Email is open, and I'll check in with you on that. I certainly don't want the television telling me what to do. Got that straight. All right, argument four, and then I'll go right back to the phone lines. I want to get through this fourth argument here for the elimination of television by gerrymander, 1970s here, but every bit as timely today as the day it was written, along with the venality of its controllers. Venal meaning, what is venal? Sort of like low, slimy. No class. Along with the venality of its controllers, the technology of television predetermines the boundaries of its content. Let's see if we can parse that. The technology of television predetermines the boundaries of its content. Some information can be conveyed completely, some partially, and some not at all. The most effective telecommunications are the gross, simplified, linear messages and programs that conveniently fit the purposes of the medium's commercial controllers. Television's highest potential is advertising. This cannot be changed. The bias is inherent in the technology. There's a book, what was this, The Dumbest Generation, that I'm still very much wanting to do a whole program on, about how today's generation, I'm talking about young people in their teens and 20s today, no longer read. And as I've been sitting down lately, I've been really trying to carve out time and make time for books. I am realizing that there is information that cannot be conveyed in any other way. There really can't. You know, movies won't do it, documentaries can't do it justice, because you've got to really sit and grapple with concepts. And concepts are really difficult to show in television. I know this because when I've done, over 2,000 media interviews. I've done more television interviews than I can even count. And the one thing that I can tell you is that when I'm being interviewed by a television producer, it is so much more difficult than when I'm being interviewed by an intelligent print writer. Because the print writer has the ability to take concepts and formulate them onto a page, but the television producer does not. It attracts a very different kind of person with a different kind of mind. They want to know, how can I show that on the screen? And when I'm talking about issues of liberty, issues of human dignity, issues of independence, I can't boil that down to you know, blood on the pavement for you. That's something that's going to take thought, actual thought, and it's hard to show that on a screen. It's hard to show what it feels like to feel your options being closed off. It's hard to show what it feels like to want to rebel and yet be completely surrounded by an authoritarian culture. It's hard to show how specific technologies and practices feed into this sort of encroaching mindset. It's easy to write about. It's not all that easy to write about, but when it's written about, you can at least grasp it when you read it. But you can't show that on TV. And it would drive me nuts because I would talk about threats from technology with television producers, and every time I would get the same thing. Show me a victim. Show me a victim. Who can I interview? Well, we're all victims. No, I need a victim. when I couldn't provide one, it was like, okay, next. Next. I don't care what it is. I'd rather show, you know, balloons floating around at a carnival than talk about real issues, because at least I can film the balloons. They're colorful and they float. But when you're talking about intellectual issues or emotional issues or spiritual issues, they can't capture that. Political issues, you can't capture that on television. So it is indeed true that the medium itself prevents certain discussions, crucial discussions that we need to be having as a society. All right, let me go back to those phone lines and let us say hello to Dan, listening on the Internet in New Hampshire. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi there. Good to hear from you.
You as well. We miss you up at Taproom Tuesdays, man.
Well, you know, I am going to be speaking at the Boston Tea Party next Sunday. And, in fact, I should put out a shout for that. Yeah, this coming Sunday, actually. The Boston Tea Party event online at, what is it, Tea Party, BostonTeaParty08.com or org, I think, somewhere. Anyway, anybody in the Boston, New England, New Hampshire, Connecticut, all of the surrounding areas, I urge you to come down to Faneuil Hall.
Don't forget
and
Rhode Island.
Yeah, you going to be there?
Yes.
All right, good.
I will. And I need to differ with you a little bit. I think that TV can deliver good messages. It doesn't often, as in its present state. And I think that actually the biggest problem is not the medium. The biggest problem is the lack of critical thinking on the part of most of the viewers.
Well, give me an example. Lay it on me here. Let's hear your disagreement in full force.
I watch probably more TV than you do. I know I watch more than you do. You don't watch any. And I came across, for instance, the what was it called? The Last Enemy. Did you ever watch that by perchance?
You know, I had a whole bunch of people send it to me, but until somebody sends me a DVD, I'll probably never get to it. If I had a DVD, I would indeed pop it in.
I don't know if it's still available. I think it's kind of a thing where they leave it up on the web.
You can buy it. Yeah, you can actually buy it. They've got an order place
absolutely
on public television where you can order it. But
I mean, that was there. I watch a lot of public TV. I watch a lot of C-SPAN. It's a way of, I'm a more visual and oral person. I read. I love to read. I was in jail for 8 months.
Yep. I guess the powers that be didn't want to hear about that.
5 to 6 books a week. 5 to 6 books a week for 8 months and 11 days.
Wow.
And not all of it was dribble. I mean, I there were a few,
Careful, you're going to have me looking forward to jail here if I get to read 5 or 6 books a week.
If you want to do some reading, I'll tell you, that's a place to be.
Well, Dan, let me tell you something, because I've been noticing this when people send me links, because about a third of the links I get these days, and, I've been on the net since there was a net, and I've really watched a shift. About a third of the links I get now are links to YouTube. And even my husband, he'll send me a YouTube link. I never click them up. So everybody out there listening, your chances of me clicking up a YouTube link that you send me are like 1 in 100. Your chances of me clicking up a news story are probably 1 in 2. And I realize the reason is I hate being dragged into something that is going to force me to make a time commitment. I hate it. I was trying to figure out why it is that I hate listening to voicemail, and why even on my voicemail message it says, if you really want to reach me, send me an email. You're welcome to leave a message here, but if you really want to get a hold of me, send me an email, because it's an issue of control. I hate the feeling that someone else is taking me for a ride. I've hopped into their carriage, behind their horse, and they're going to take me exactly where they want to take me. And at some point, if I want to jump ahead, if I want to kind of jump to the end or see what the point is, I am stuck there for, 2, 3, 5, 10 minutes watching this garbage.
Oh, listen, YouTube videos, 99% of them are 10 minutes long.
Well, that's 10 minutes of my life if it were an email or a link, I would click it up, and within 30 seconds, I'd make a decision, do I want to read this or not?
This is a trick that most people don't seem to get. What you do when you've got a YouTube video is you click on the link, open up the page, let it start loading, and then pause it. I do this all the time. You pause it, and then you can let it load, and you can go to any point in that video at that point and watch the rest of it. Watch a piece of it. Watch, you know, you can watch the first moments, and if it looks like it's durable, then you get rid of it. But I'll tell you what, the visual media is the wave of the future, and it isn't all bad.
Well, I'm not saying it's all bad. I'm saying from where I sit, I don't like being led by the nose. I like being able at any moment to say, you know, let me jump ahead. You're boring the heck out of me.
Now,
let me skip three paragraphs.
Let the thing load, and then you can jump into it anywhere you want.
All right, fair enough.
Let
me just be my ADD skills. Hey, thank you, Dan. I appreciate your calling in with that. I will indeed give that a shot. But I got to say, you know, for me, I'm maybe I'm a dinosaur. Maybe I'm a relic from a previous era, but I really do like print. I really prefer it over media. And, you know, I can enjoy a movie as much as the next person, but if I really want to get information, which is what I think is so crucial right now, I would much prefer to get it in writing. Now, that's not to say there's not great documentaries, America, Freedom to Fascism being one, but I think I'll stick with my books. All right, we'll be back tomorrow and do it all again here on the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show. We'll see you then.